Okay, so welcome to our final class, which is the second, well, it's really the third review, and it's going through the entire course from A to Z. The course is broken down into two basic parts. The first part is called being human, and the second part is called being Jewish. And I boiled it down to basically five questions. We could say that the whole first part of the course is really trying to answer up in detail five questions. And the second part of the course is trying to answer up in detail six questions. So I'm going to ask these questions to you, and you can be very vague. The goal, we don't have to give like a very detailed answer, but I just want to try and see where we're holding with these questions, okay? Okay, so first question is definition of good and evil. How have we
So
defined good and evil?
good is being selfless and evil is selfish.
Okay, good. And what is the nature of selflessness and selfishness? That's the second question. What does it mean, selfish, and what does it mean, selfless?
Selfless is putting others before you.
How is that done? Yeah. How is that done?
Your needs are more real to me than my own.
That's it. But how do we do that? What's the inner work? One word.
Ego?
Silence. That's the inner work. Because I know, Mrs. Silver, your whole thing with like, and a lot of my wife as well, the whole thing with like letting go of yourself, and it's like, that whole thing. It's really not like what those kind of thoughts that come up. That's not what it means, Bichlal. It literally just means being internally quiet. That's literally what selflessness means. There's no more noise. Imagine this. If you really reached a level of selflessness, you could lie in bed at night, not fall asleep, and not be bored, not be frustrated, be completely content just lying in bed awake without any thoughts going through your mind. Imagine such a thought. Imagine such an idea. Like, what person in 2024 could even imagine such an experience? But that's what we get. That's the goal. That, I mean, it's not the goal to lie in bed, but that inner state of quiet, and that's really okay. Can we? What? This is a vague question. I don't know if you'll get the question. It's vague. What is the essential nature of everything? That's a really vague question, though.
Yes.
So what can we divide everything into? When you're talking about a thing or a person, let's say a person, what can we kind of divide them into two compartments?
Soul and body.
But what was it that we could, do you remember what we referred to it as? We referred to it as essence and
Name.
name. Excellent. Okay. Then the question is, how is there a creation? If God is one and we have this whole, complex creation, how is that? Do you remember the mechanism, the mechanism, what we call the mechanism that he uses to create creation that gives us this illusion of duality and multiplicity? That was called Klipa and Sitra Achra. That's like the tool that he used. And then we ask the question, what is a soul and how does it function? Well, let's leave that because we're going to get into that. So that was really being human. We define good and evil. We defined selfless and selfish. We defined what everything is. we defined how it is that God made creation and gave us free will. And then we started to discuss the mechanics of the soul. How does the soul work? What is a soul? How does it work? That was part one, being human. Part two, being Jewish. Difference between a Jew and a non-Jew on one foot.
Neshama.
Yeah. Say it a bit more. Speak out and just say a little bit more. That is the difference.
Human being with neshama.
Yeah. So a goy is a human being, and a Jew is a human being with a neshama. What does it mean that we are the chosen nation? This was a complicated share. This needs to like be hazard a lot to get that clear. What does it mean that we're the chosen nation?
That God found a piece of himself in us.
Well done. Excellent.
It was very interesting to me when he taught that.
That's amazing. Thank you for knowing that. Appreciate that. Okay, another simple question. What is the Torah? You realize that most people, do you realize that most from Yidden would flap around, embarrassingly flap around at these questions? It's that amazing because you're like, well, how can you not know these questions? How can you not be clear? These are like, this is what Yiddishkeit is, but literally, like the majority of people would just flap around and feel very embarrassed. It would be embarrassing to ask somebody, what is the Torah? Like a man, you know, a 60-year-old man who's been learning through his whole life says, what is it? He will feel embarrassed because he won't feel comfortable answering that question. We answered it in one word.
Mitzvahs.
No.
Hashem's will.
Yeah, Ratzon. Ratzonoi. Ratzon Hashem. Yeah, which is mitzvahs. It is mitzvahs. You're right. What's the purpose of creation? So we spoke this out in a Chabad way, because not everybody says dear b'tachtonim, but we spoke about other things as well, and we included them, but we're gonna go with dear b'tachtonim, okay? And then what is the difference between our generation and all the previous generations? Remember what our generation is comparable to?
But we're not doing whatever we're doing for any reward or punishment, something like that.
Yeah, we've gone to like the essence of the relationship now. We're like, we are the product of, you know, 3,336 years of Yidden, or go back to Avram, however, go back to Adam if you want. We're the product, and we're in this place now where we can serve Hashem really for himself, which is, that's amazing. That's really amazing. Okay, so look, we're gonna go. I've literally got all of these questions. It's a lot of questions, and we're just gonna like zip through. I'm gonna answer them, and these are the questions that you're gonna fill in your quiz for. And you'll feel really good, I think. It will make you feel, you'll feel good doing this quiz. Okay. Okay. So we defined the terms of good and evil as selfish and selfless. Yeah, and we said, why is it ironic? Why is it ironic that when you bounce around online and try and get a definition of good and evil, why is it so ironic that no one gives you a reasonable definition of good and evil? Why is that ironic? Because we all know inside, we all have this selfish, selfless barometer inside us. So everybody internally has the same definition of good and evil. But if you look on Wikipedia or any of the websites, no one will give you a decent definition, which is ironic because it's usually the opposite way around. Everyone will tell you this is this and this is that, and internally no one has a clue. But with good and evil, it's the exact opposite. Everyone knows internally what's good and what's bad, what's evil and what's righteous, what's selfish and what's selfless. But definitions of good and evil are just, they're not there, okay? Do you remember why we called a why the why Chazal called a predatory animal a chaya ra?
He has himself in mind.
Because, well, an animal Can't be selfish. I mean, an animal is just an animal. It just doesn't have the ability to not be selfish. So an animal that eats other animals, Chazal called it a chaya ra, because that's the definition. That's like the spitz of ra is taking the life of another so that you can live longer. That's basically saying my life is ultimately more choshev than your life. So it's not like a tiger is intrinsically ra. It's just the same as a cow, just the cow's programmed to eat grass, the tiger, flesh. But that's why it's called a chaya ra. What do we call a human being who has embodied the trait of goodness? Who's become really good? What's that trait called? Go on.
Yeah, it's like at the tip of my tongue.
What's the trait that
Like,
isn't true?
Mother Teresa, we said, like a saint, like
Well, no. In just as like when we're giving, like describing the character of someone, what is the word that describes the character of a selfless person? There isn't a trait like kindness or courage or strength. It's the foundation of all traits.
Tithe.
What?
Tithe. Good.
Yeah, but what is that when a person embodies that trait? Moshe was Tov. What was he?
Humble, humble.
Humble. Thank you. Humility is not another trait. Humility is the foundation of our character. It's the foundation of all traits. And the opposite, an evil person
Arrogant.
is arrogant. Yeah. Why is it that you can't label a flood good or bad?
It depends on the context.
You do. It's good for you, it's bad for me. It's good for the birds, it's bad for my parnassa. So anything that happens is not good or bad. It's all just what it is. You with me?
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Humility and arrogance somehow makes it sound like there's some. No one's on the perfect level of humility like Moshe.
Course.
So that makes a person feel like something's wrong with me, like I'm bad.
No, chas v'shalom. But just the ultimate level, as you get more and more good, you become more and more humble. The ultimate level of humility would mean that you would bring down the luchos, from Shemayim. But there's a lot of madregas before that, But that is what that is called. That is called being good. All the other qualities are built on the humility. Humility means selfless. It means I'm quiet internally. All of the skills and all of my everything that I have that's impressive, I don't, in fact, it makes me feel uncomfortable a little bit. Like, why did you give it all to me, Hashem? Like that's the, as opposed to, look at me. That's arrogance. That's the voice inside. That's why, by the way, why we make a lot of noise when we say Haman. What's the inyan of making noise by Haman? That's the inyan. The inyan is Rash and Russia. It's the same letters. It's the same inyan. The louder it is internally, the more a person is disconnected from Tov. So we need to be working on quietening that noise. And the way did Yitzi, Ms. Abram, did Yitzi tell you about that book that we printed?
Yes.
Did he send you a
Yes,
copy?
I have a copy. Yeah.
Oh yeah, Mrs. Sill, we need you. You didn't get a copy, did you?
I got a copy. You emailed me once.
A book?
It's not a book, just some, I don't know, like 30 pages.
Oh, so no. Do me a favor, send me an email with your address and I will send you this book. This
Okay.
book is Mamash Tikkun HaNefesh, Mamash. Did you start reading it?
I started. I know I'm supposed to do a day, one lesson a day, but some of them are harder to get through.
But you just, it's just try. And if you're really not, if it's not speaking to you right now, jump to day 46. Start
Right,
from
you
day
told me to
46.
start there. I think we spoke about it a little while ago. You start in the middle, and F45 or 46, yeah.
Yeah. So that book can really help you generate inner silence. And it's not a quick fix, and it but the answer's not out there with this doctor and this medicine and this therapy and this seminar. It none of that. But the way it works is find this book. I've read through hundreds, not hundreds, dozens and dozens of books. And this book, if you read it, I think you really need to read it six times. That's how long it took me until it fixed me. But I've told people to read it four times. That will make a big difference. But if you can just read this book back to front, if I show you my copies, they're falling to pieces. It's just so funny. But anyway, so that's generating the inner silence is basically done through. That's my best advice to you is this book. Just read it over and over and over again. Okay. And the two characters in the Chumash who represent the ultimate struggle between good and evil.
Nice and Paris.
Okay, so that was class one. Class two. How comes it can be that a person who is ultimately humble and a person who's ultimately selfish could be exhibiting the same kind of behaviors?
Because the situation is always neutral.
Exactly. The behavior is always neutral. It's to do with the intention. Very good. Okay. Do you remember the three levels of listening? This is very important to know.
I'm waiting for the person to stop talking so that I can talk.
That's number one. Listen to waiting to reply. That's not listening bichlal. That's what we do most of the time.
And then thinking of a similar situation that happened to me.
But analyzing, it could be that, it could be anything, it could, yeah, but the analyzing, that's a semi-listening, meaning you are listening, but really you're listening to your thoughts. And then the highest level of listening
As yourself is not there at all.
is just silence. Silence, meaning that you're really there. You're not immersed in your thoughts. You're there. That's why when someone's innerly in has an inner silence and they're listening to you, it's the most cathartic feeling you can. It's just, it's very rare that you have such a thing. But when you do have that moment when someone's genuinely still, you're able to you it's very, very cathartic. Yeah, remember what is it? Remember we spoke about why is it that on average women or anyone with anorexia have got a higher IQ, sufferers of anorexia bichlal have got a higher IQ on average than regular people who don't have anorexia. The way that works is that it's a simplification, but it's true. Is the way it works is that a person who looks in the mirror, who's objectively very, very thin, but because their mind is more powerful, they can actually believe that they're overweight when they're completely not, the opposite. It's to do with the power of the mind. The more powerful your mind, it's funny, you might think that like the easy, the better, the more quick to for lighter, the more susceptible you are to all kinds of stuff. A powerful mind is a dangerous, dangerous thing. It's like a big bomb. It's like AI. It can be used for amazing things, it can be used for terrible things. So just a powerful mind is a very, very powerful, it's a powerful weapon. And it can be used for good, but unfortunately, it can. And most of the times, it's probably worth, less to the person than it would be better to have a less powerful mind. But that's one of the ideas there. Okay, so we got to now class three. What does your name represent?
Personality, everything about you.
Yeah. So the way we said it is everything you have. You have a personality, you have an intellect, you have emotions, you have a car, you have a house, you have everything you have. That's not who you are. So your name is what you have. And that's unique. Everyone's got a unique name. Yeah. And why was it that the I is such a good analogy for who you are and what you have?
We say the pupil is who you are, then the iris is your name.
Yeah.
So
So
it's what
why,
you.
what's the beauty of that? Do you guys look into your kids' eyes now, by the way, on Friday night? You do that?
Yeah. In a
Is it
while.
what?
Yeah, sometimes, not
Yeah, okay, not
consistently.
religiously. Good. You shouldn't do anything religiously. But
Yeah.
it's special, no?
Yeah, you see yourself.
You see yourself. Why? Because we're all one. Essentially, we're all one. Just our names are different. Especially Kabul home with your family, with Am Yisrael, even with all of humankind, even with everything. Even with everything. The more a person is in themselves, the essence of who they are, the more they can connect with every single human being. And not every human being, every animal and every tree and every rock as well, literally. The more a person becomes connected to not that part of themselves, that's not the way of saying it, because it's not a part of yourself, it's yourself. Yeah, the more you become one with everyone, it's amazing, it really is. Yeah, so how is it, what's the means by which we experience the essence of another? What's the only gateway to the other, the actual other?
Spending time with the person, listening to them.
Sorry?
Listening.
Their name. You get to the other through the name. The whole point of it, like for example, your name, like Mrs. Silver, you just said before, nefesh and what'd you say, soul,
Oh,
body and soul. And that is who you are and what you have. You are a soul, you have a body. So that's name. And how would I know if it wasn't for your body, how would I know that you're there? You get to the person through the name. That's how you get to the person, through everything about them. But all of that is just a corridor to them. We get caught up in thinking that that's them, that's the person. But really, all it is just a corridor to them. It's important. What does it mean to identify with something?
you see yourself in it, something like that.
Yeah, better. Yeah, you got it. But what, to be a little tighter, to identify means your sense of self merges with X. That's what it means, and that is the source of human self-sacrifice. Human self-sacrifice. I have identified with my ideology. Therefore, my ideology is more real to me than my body. You're threatening my ideology. I'll give up my body for my ideology. Because that's me. My body's just, it's just the thing I've got. But me, the real me, that's my ideology. So I'll give up my life for freedom. I'll give up my life. You saw that nut the other day who burned himself, the guy who burned himself in front of the Israeli embassy or something, the American soldier.
Oh, yes, I heard about that.
And screaming free Palestine, free, but set yourself on fire, mamash. Nut. Anyway, people do crazy stuff like that. That is to do with identification. If a person identifies with this cause profoundly enough, he will give up his life for his cause, and it will be like he doesn't even have a choice in the matter. That's how it will be. It will be so compelling. Remember what word in the Shema refers to the Jewish ability to actually give up their ideology? We might not have said this. I think we did say it, but it's a very small point. Mo'idecha. Mo'id. That's a very, very holy word. Like a really, really holy word. It's funny because it's like just means very. But it's really, really A very, very heilige word, mamash. Same the word, another word that's incredibly heilig is chen. Not ches with a kaf, like ken. Yes, the word ken is very, very heilig as well. So we said before, what was the mechanism that Hashem used to create creation that gives it this apparent duality, multiplicity?
No, it's not it. Is that the Dira B'Tachtonim?
Klipa v'sitra achra.
Oh, right here.
Klipa v'sitra achra. Okay. And if we were to if we were to divide everything we do in our lives into two categories, what would we divide them into? Everything we do in our life falls into one or the other category. Things that we do.
Good and bad.
Mitzvah Nevera.
Forget that you're Jewish. Chas v'shalom. Ends and means to ends. Life breaks down into that. That's a very, very important breakdown. That's one of the most important things I've ever learned in my life. That there are things that you do as ends unto themselves, and there are things that you do that are means to ends. There are relationships that you have that are ends unto themselves. Like, you're not trying to get anything out of your husband. You're not trying to, I mean, you shouldn't be. Yeah, most people are. You're not trying to get anything out of your kids. Okay? They are ends unto themselves. The taxi driver, your relationship with the taxi driver, that's kulu means to an end. Your relationship with the bank teller, kulu means to an end, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, but it's very important to know what it ends and what it means to ends. And ends should never, ever take second place to means to ends. Again, logistically in the situation, then sometimes whatever, but I'm talking like internally. If when a person mixes up ends and means to ends, yeah, they've fallen, they're in it, they need to work that out. They really need to work that out. Okay. When is it that we see the person more clearly? When they're involved in ends or in means to ends?
Ends.
Exactly. When a person's doing something as a means to an end, it's like I went to LA last week, yeah, like a couple of weeks ago. That was a 15-hour plane ride. Yeah. That was like, I didn't enjoy that. Yeah. And it was, so you're like, really, you're si when I'm involved in my means to ends, you would think, oh, look, he's on a plane. He must like enjoy going on planes. I'm like, no, I don't want to be on this plane at all. So, in fact, you're getting the wrong message. It's not just that it conceals who I am. So, it's not that it just doesn't reveal who I am. It can actually give you the wrong impression of who I am. You with me? Like exercising, you see me running, and if I'm doing it, I mean, I quite enjoy running, and I suppose people do when they do that when they get into it. But if a person doesn't, he's just doing it to be healthy. You might think he's in, and he's like, no, I would much rather be doing other things. I'm just doing this to be healthy. So it's not like, as opposed to when I'm skiing, yeah, which has got no end unto itself. It's funny. When I went to LA. I wanted to go to Six Flags, yeah. Whatever, that stuff doesn't exist in Israel, and I thought I'd do that. So I tell my dad, and my dad's like making fun of me like I'm a kid, like a little baby. And he was on a skiing trip. So I said to him, I was like, Dad, with all due respect, I've just given up like a morning to go to Magic Mountain. And it's cost me like, $100. You're doing the exact same thing for a week. and it's costing you thousands of dollars. The exact same thing. It's very funny. It's just skiing is like, well, you know, I'm like, I just wanted to do the same thing. Just I wasn't prepared to spend that much time and that much money. And he kind of gulped and went, It's very funny. Very funny. Anyway, yeah. So the idea of ends and means to ends is, in technical jargon, is called your inner will and your outer will. Yeah. And that's why speech that comes from what's called the external breath is what Hashem used to make the world, because this world is a means to an end. What's the end of this world?
Next one.
We don't say that.
The Vegas, but Sashem.
What the end? I mean, Rashi says at the very beginning of the Chumash, the point of the world is that Yidden do Torah. What you said is right. Dveikus is Yidden doing Torah. That's called Dveikus. Yidden performing Torah and mitzvahs. So that's the point of that's the purpose of creation. That's the ends. What's the means to the end is creation itself. So that was created with an outer breath. That's the breath of speech. That's why you can talk for so long. But if you blow up a balloon, you know, after two or three balloons, you're out of breath. You know, that's an inner breath. That's what Hashem blew he blew the neshama into us. That was an end unto itself. Yeah, symbolized by the inner and outer breath. And why is the rock analogy? Remember we spoke about carving your name into the rock? Why is that such a good analogy for creation? Because now your name exists, but nothing was added to the rock. So that's how creation works. Nothing ever got added to Hashem. In a sense, he kind of removed, in a sense, he removed a part of himself and allowed you to be. But nothing got added through creation. Okay, and we said Klipa Sitracha is the mechanism that Hashem used to. You're going to enjoy this because you'll see we basically answered up all the questions. So when you get back to the test, it's multiple choice. It should be really enjoyable, I hope. Okay. What is a soul? That's a hard question. A soul is a highly structured energy. A soul knows, it feels, it behaves. It is. And you remember the five levels of the soul? This would be big brownie points.
Will Ratzlin.
What?
Will Ratzlin.
What was the highest level before will? Remember?
Oneg.
Oneg,
But I
excellent.
have my notes, so
Ratzon.
I take all the credit.
Oneg, Ratzon.
Seichel. Emotion and behavior.
Very good. Okay, in Hebrew, oineg, ratzon, seichel, midas, levushim. Pleasure, will, intellect, emotions, behavior. To get that really, I mean that's you know years of learning to get that clear. But when you get the system down, it's amazing how helpful that is. I can't tell you how amazing that is to know how it is that you're actually working. Okay, remember that pleasure is always an end unto itself, but pleasure is just happy being by itself. Pleasure's content. Ratzon is the pleasure kind of reaching, trying to go somewhere else. That's why it becomes enclosed in Ratzon. And remember the three elements of Seichel? Go to your favorite Lubavitcher shul. Three
Chachma
elements of
bina das,
Seichel. What?
Chabad, Chachma bina das,
What's acronym for?
Chachma bina das.
Yes. And do you remember how we explain those in single words beginning with D? Kind of. Chochmah discovers the idea. Bina develops the idea. And Das identifies with the idea. And what are the two emotions? There's only two emotions, really, strictly.
Love or hate, or love, no, not love or hate.
Yeah, it's not wrong, but we usually say love and fear. Love and fear, and they are really an attraction towards, that's love, and a repulsion away, that's fear. And all the emotions are some kind of combination of the two of them. Okay. And what are the three forms of behavior? Do you remember?
Thought, speech, action.
Excellent.
What
Okay,
was the
that
first
was
one? What was the first one? Oh, sorry.
thought, speech, action.
Thought, okay.
Yeah. Okay, that's called being human. Part two, being Jewish, class six, is definition of a human being. Is a human being. Now, the truth is, we spoke about it being it's really the intellect. A human being stands on two legs. That's quite important. Kabbalistically, that's very important. No other mammal stands on two legs. Even though monkeys can stand on two legs, there's no animal that actually walks. You could say maybe a kangaroo, but there's no animals that walk that are bipedal, it's called. So a human being walks on two legs. And his intellect is that he can speak. That is the definition of a human being. In Hebrew, we call it domem, somer, chai, and medaber. That's a very important point because that's the human intellect speaks. An animal also has an intellect, a rudimentary intellect, doesn't speak. So in fact, in the Or Haim, I saw it once, that he referred to a human being as a chai hamadaber, a speaking animal. Anyway, definition of a Jew, Mr. Silver said that before, a human being with an neshama. Okay. The four levels within creation, oh, we just said the four levels are inanimate, vegetable, animal, and human. And do you remember the two analogies that we gave for the Jewish soul compared and the Shekhinah? Because the Shekhinah isn't the Jewish soul. The Shekhinah Kedosha is the source of all Jewish souls. So the two analogies we gave, I'm not going to go into it now, is the field of apples and the apples, the orchard and the apples. And the sun and the sparkles of light on the water of the ocean. Okay.
We did the sun and the rays, right?
The sun, the rays, yeah, but in the, that's not a bad definition, but it's the in this context we were talking about the sun and the rays is really teaching you about how the neshama is connected to God at all times. But the idea of the each soul being some kind of individual manifestation of Hashem, of the Shekhinah, that's a good analogy is the speckles of light, the sparkles of light on the ocean. Okay, this is very important. What is the goal of a human being?
To be selfless with other people.
To what?
The connection with more human beings,
Yeah.
right?
You said, Mrs. Abramov, you said it earlier. To recognize another human being and to get to the place where other human beings are more real to you than you are to yourself, where your first thought when you meet someone is not what do they think of me, but it's how can I help you? That's a very, that not only is that a high level, it's also being freed from Gehenna as well. What's the goal of the Jew?
And God is
When,
more real to me.
yeah, when God becomes more real to me. The Jew naturally should be. I mean, we're in Gullus now, so it's not like that. But naturally, a Jew should be able to put the reality of another human beyond them. And Mrs. Silver, you said this beautifully. The inyan of Am Yisrael being the chosen nation, it's not because we were prettier, it's not because we were more humble, it's not because we were more intelligent, it's not because we had nicer cars. It was because he saw himself in us. That's what it means we're chosen. It's got nothing to do with us, it's to do with him. It's to do with him. And that's really the idea of our relationship with our children, our relationship with our that's really what a relationship is the recognition of yourself in the other, that you're not really two separate beings. What do you remember the we gave that example of when you've got the $10 bill and the $100 bill? That isn't called a free choice decision. Remember what we called that? Like what is it? Because you can't choose the $10 bill, can you?
Right.
What, why can't you choose the $10 bill?
Because it doesn't make sense.
Exactly. You're compelled by your intellect to choose the $100 bill. So that's not free will. You can't, like, you know, a guy puts a gun to your head and says, you know, says light Shabbos candles. You can't say that that was free will. You're being forced into doing it. So too, that $100 bill and the $10 bill, you are being compelled to choose the $100 bill. You've got no option in the matter. So that isn't called free will. That's called choice. That's called intellectual choice. And it's interesting, I realized it this week. What do the goyim say? What are the what are the, what is it, what do we say in the world when you make a good decision? What how do they describe a good decision?
When you get a better benefit.
They call it, you, that's called, that's, that was an intelligent decision. That's like they say, that's basically saying you made a good decision. You made an intelligent decision. That was an irrational, that was a rash, that was a rash decision. That was an intelligent decision. Intelligent means a good decision. That means you used your mind and you balanced it all out and you worked out the cheshbon. That's not free will. That's available to all human beings. Free will is specifically available only to the Jew. Okay? And it's nothing to do, it's nothing to do with us. It's just because that's we've got that neshama in us. That's what free will is. And free will is the same thing as Mesiras Nefesh, Jewish Mesiras Nefesh, and Tshuva. Those three things are the same phenomena, just expressed in different circumstances. So that same kind of flaring up of my soul. Do you remember I gave you the example of the tuna sandwich and the chicken sandwich that I had? When I chose, that was the day I made tshuva, when I was 19 years old, whatever, or 20 years old, and I opted for a tuna sandwich instead of a non-kosher chicken sandwich for no reason. That was the day that I did tshuva. And that's called free will. But that, when that happens to you, that same experience happens to you on Yom Kippur, it's called tshuva. When that same experience happens to you when the goy has a gun to your head and says, bow to the idol, that's called Mesiras Nefesh. It's the same thing happening, just it depends in what context, whether it's called tshuva, Mesiras Nefesh, or Bechira Chofshis. Same thing. Okay, we're getting there. We said before the Torah is described as Hashem's Ratzon, okay, and him and his Ratzon is one. So when we're involved in Torah and mitzvahs, we're involved in his Ratzon, and he is one with his Ratzon. That means we're merged with him, just like you're merged, like when your kid does something for you, yeah, they're becoming merged with your Ratzon. That means they become merged with you. So too, when you do a mitzvah, you become merged with God because that's his ratzon. You and him and his ratzon merge, and therefore his ratzon merge, and that means you and he merged. And remember, the first word in the Ten Commandments is Anoichi, and that is in the Gemara. It's Ana Nafshi Kasiva Yavith. Meaning, I gave you my soul in writing. That's what the Torah is. The Torah is, it's I mean, it's a bit sucky to call it a love note from God, yeah? But it's really, it's, he gave us his diary, so to speak. And just like a person is in their diary, the person's in the words, they're contained within those words. So too, the Bnei Shalom is contained within the words of his Torah. And do you remember what we described Lifnim Meshuras Adin as? What does it mean to be Lifnim Meshuras Adin? Everyone says it means to just do more than what's required of you. That's not true at all. Lifnim Meshuras Adin means you put together from what you see what Hashem really wants. For example, I'll give you a really good example of Lifnim Meshuras Adin. Yeah. When I go to the mikveh on a Friday afternoon, yeah, I turn the ringer of my phone off when I go down because the changing room's upstairs. I turn the ringer of my phone off because I've been in the changing room before when someone's gone down to the board, down to the mikveh, and their phone's ringing with an annoying ring, and it's annoying, yeah. And you know that Hashem doesn't like you to impinge upon anybody. We know that, yeah. So there's no halacha that you have to turn off your phone, but that means you chapped Hashem, so to speak, meaning you chapped that he doesn't like you putting other people out. So is there halacha about turning your phone off when you go into the mikveh? No, that's called lifnim meshuras hadin, meaning you know Hashem, like killing bugs. Are you allowed to kill bugs? You are allowed to kill bugs, really. Not on Shabbos, but generally you can. But you know that Hashem doesn't like, he really values life. So if you don't have to, just let it crawl under the cupboard and it's gone and you're finished. That's called Lifnim Meshuras Adin. Yeah? Except for mosquitoes. They have a din of roidif, so you can kill them. And yeah. Okay, we're getting there. Remember the two unities that we spoke about? There's two levels of yichud.
I have here in my notes, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad is the higher level, and Baruch Shem Kibbo and Malchus Le'olam Ve'ed is the lower level.
Yeah, so we've got the higher unity and the lower unity. Okay, the higher unity is referring to that endless nothingness of simple. If you want to learn about the higher unity, go on YouTube and listen to a guy called Rupert Spira, Spira. Yeah, he is so synced in with the high unity, it's just amazing, really special. But he's got no concept of the lower unity. The lower unity is an organizational unity, just like a good organization is really they're really unified. That's the lower level of unity, an organizational unity. So the higher level of unity is like a complete just singularity of everything. And the lower level of unity is this organizational unity. Okay. And we explained that why when a guy that is an organizational unity, the I suppose you could say the lowest, the smallest organization would be like you and your pen. Right now, you're writing, Miss Albert, if you're writing, yeah? So really, you and your pen are creating an organization. Your pen is not you, yeah? But you're writing with your pen on the paper. So your pen is being, so to speak, subservient to your Ratzon. So like if your kid paints on the wall, yeah, he draws with your pen on the wall. And you turn around to him and say, "Why are you doing that?" He'll say, "I didn't do anything. The pen did it." Yeah, as I've had happen to me before. Then that's not valid. Why? Because the pen has become nullified to your will. Like when your person hits a person with a stick, chas v'shalom, you can't blame the stick. You hit the person. It's your will. That's called an organizational unity. Okay. That's the smallest level of organizational unity. And that's really the difference between an organization and an organism. An organism is an organization that is more tightly compacted. You're made up of 50 trillion cells, yeah? But they're smushed together so tight that you look like a single being. That's called an organism. Whereas if you've got like, a billion ants or a million ants together, yeah, that's called an organization. But really, the only difference is that an organism is more tightly compacted. Okay. And Dira Petachtoim is referring to that organization on this world, that Hashem's organization, you could call it Hashem Incorporated, is mamash taking place. Yeah, that's what we're waiting for. When all of reality, just like, Lavdil, Google and Amazon, these huge companies are like perfectly aligned and perfectly in sync. Yeah, that's the day that we're waiting for, when the world is operating on that kind of organizational level of unity. And the definition of bittul, yeah, which is a word that people cringe at. I try not to use it because people got such negativity when it comes to that word, bittul or nullification. Bittul means being the ultimate individual you can. You have to find what is so individual about you and run with it in every way, but it should be dedicated to Rabboni Shalom. It's got nothing to do with losing your unique koichas. Ephes, it's the opposite. It's the opposite. It's about finding your unique koichas and running with them and developing them and making them breathtaking, but giving them to the Rabboni Shlom, meaning dedicating them to his cause. If you know how to speak, yeah, then give Torah lectures or help women get over traumas, whatever. If you've got a lot of money, then help build tour organizations and feed poor people. Whatever you've got, give it to Rabboni Shlom. That's what Bittul means. Okay, the final class. Okay, Chassidus. Remember, what is Chassidus?
Essence.
Essence. Chassidus means relating to your essence, seeing through your name. That's why Yisrael Baal Shem Tov. Remember what Tov means? Tov means selfless, which could be compared to transparency. So Baal Shem Tov, his name was transparent to him. That's what Chassidus is. Chassidus is his kashrus to the essence. It's not being part of a club. It's not being a part of a moistus. That can be nice, but that isn't what Chassidus is bechlal. Chassidus is being part of yourself, being connected to yourself. Do you remember what the five stages of the heart were? This is also a very important thing to try and remember.
Timtim halev, shviras halev, meriras halev, psichas halev, and tov levav.
Two flavor. Well remembered. That's amazing. Yeah, that's right. Okay. It's very kedai to remember what all of that is. You can go on the website of B'nai Aliyah. There's a shiur called the Redemption of the Heart. That's a very helpful shiur to listen to if you want to chazer that idea. Very helpful. Okay, what's the definition of galus? Personal galus, national galus, all the same thing. Definition of galus is a disconnect between who you are and your name and the expression of who you are. That's called galus. When you are not expressing who you are accurately to varying degrees, that's called galus. So the galus that we're in right now is Hashem is not being able to express who he is, because who he is Torah and mitzvahs. So only when the world is completely involved in Torah and mitzvahs, that will be Hashem's ultimate expression. That's called Geula. We're looking forward to Geula because it's his, so that Hashem can express himself accurately and stop feeling so constricted by all of us selfish people. Okay. And why is our relationship to God compared to the relationship of a very elderly couple? our relationship, meaning our in this door, Tafshin Pei Dalet, 2024. Why? What's the connection between an old age couple and our generation's relationship to Hashem?
They know each other's essences already. They don't need all the extras.
It's not even they don't even need it. It's not even there particularly. Very elderly couple probably don't even have any physical relationship left, and they can just sit there. I can't imagine there's so much, gazing into each other's eyes and all that stuff. It's just they're one. They're completely one. They're that's the level of that. That's why there's no. We're not feeling anything anymore. It's like we're so we've gone to S. We're with Hashem on a much more essential level now. We really are. It's so
That's
important.
Geula, right?
That is Geula, yeah, when we recognize that.
But we're not there yet.
We're here, that we are in, like, oh, we feel so bad because we're not having these, like, these mystical experiences, and we're not feeling consumed in the infinite love and the blinding light, and we're not hearing the malachim with the flutes and the harps. Yeah, we're like, well, what is my rela what is what am I doing? Yeah, we've gone so beyond all of that. That was for previous generations. We don't need that anymore. That's why our door could be Sovel the Shoah, Rahmanul Islam. That we've gone beyond all externalities now, and we're with him, mamash. We're mamash with him, oh, Hashem. And remember the story that we said about the secular Jew on Pesach with the rice breads. Why did Rav Manis say that that was the most heiliger seder in the world? You remember what the message of that story was?
There were no externals. It was the real, it was the mitzvah itself.
Exactly. It wasn't a religious man doing a religious thing because he's religious. It was the etzem neshama just saying, I need some matzah. It's Seder night. We need to make a Seder. That was it. That's beautiful. That's so special. So special. And then the connection between Mashiach and oil. Mashiach means oil. So that was the inyan of the is essence. Oil is essence, like you get essential oil. Yeah. Oil always, the essence of something always distills down into an oil. And that's what Mashiach is. Mashiach is going to be when we when the essence of the Ribbono Shel Olam is revealed. The essence, not his traits, not his intellect. He's him himself, mamash. And then the final. We're finished now. Why do we serve Hashem?
Because that's what Hashem wants.
What?
That's what he wants.
Yeah, that's the second. Why do we serve Hashem?
Oh, pleasure. It's his pleasure.
What?
That's Hashem's pleasure.
That's Hashem's pleasure. So the answer to this question is we serve Hashem. Why? Because we're Jewish, and that gives him pleasure. It's the same idea, it's the same question as why do you want to live? Kacha. Why do you want to serve Hashem? There's no reason why I want to serve Hashem. My service of Hashem is so much more real than a reason. It's so much higher than seichel. Can't give a reason to why you want to serve Hashem. That's so babyish. That's so low. And it gives Hashem a nachas. It gives Hashem nachas. It's about Olam Haba. No way. I don't care about Olam Haba. I don't care about self-actualization. The only reason why I want to actualize myself is because then I'll be able to do the perfect service for Hashem. But unto myself, I don't need self-actualization. It's not about being the best I can be. It's not about being holy. It's about you, Ribbono Shel Olam. I'm here for you. You need me to be gevurah. You need me to take all these skills and talents that you've given me and turn them, exercise them and make them better, whatever it is. Okay, that so I need to do that for you. But otherwise, it's that's what it's all. That's we have to just keep pulling ourselves back to that place.
Sounds so simple.
It really is. I'm telling you, it's much more simple than any other option that I know. Anyway, maybe you know of another option, but it really is, and it really starts. I'm telling you, it really starts with this book, this Goyesha book that you can read in the bathroom that I kashered. It's completely kosher. It doesn't have any. It's completely kosher and bathroom friendly. But my answer is to read this book over and over, and it will silently the whole thing. Do you see how we've gone? It's we went all of, it's a complete bout to we ended up in the same place.
Wow.
That's the point. It's about silence. That's really the avoider. The avoider is just becoming silent. That's all you need to work on. How do you do that? This book is a really, really good start. And he gives you answers of other ways of how to do it. But that's really the answer. And then all of the complexities and all the traumas of our life just they just go away. They're just not there anymore. Because all the traumas and all the pain and all the complexities that we're dealing with, it's just to do with our thinking. It's just to do with the mind creating all of this stuff. And if we can just quieten that part of us down, then it's like it just all goes away. It's really simple. It really is. It really is. Don't I tell you one of the I got so upset with someone. There was this like psychologist woman that my wife got in touch with, and I spoke to her. She was like a little girl. She didn't, she it was she was It was whatever. So we're talking. I've got no, I mean, I've read a lot of psychology books, but I don't have any letters after my name or anything like that. Yeah. But I'm holding in a lot of the ideas, and even better than that, I'm holding in the real ideas of the masters of the Nefesh, of Chazal and of the Hasidim. And one of the things she said is that your wife needs deep healing. And I was like, what? How'd you do that? How'd you deep heal? You just turn this thing into something that is so difficult and so far. And she's gonna have to go into therapy for years. And it's we don't even know if it's gonna work because deep healing. It's that this is the you wanna hear the irony? It's shallow healing that needs to take place because the deep part of you is perfect. The deep part of you is untouched and pristine, that black part of the eye. The bit that's messed up is the little outer part of the colored part of the eye. You don't need deep healing. You need a shtickle shallow. You need a little bit of ironing, a little bit of shallow healing. That's what you need. Definitely no deep healing. And it's in our reach, Bezrat Hashem, for all of us. Okay, Shukriya.
Thank you so much.
My
It was
pleasure. Look, I'm
very
going to
unique
send you
and
this.
special.
Sorry.
It was very unique and special. Thank
Good.
you.
I'm going to send you the. I'm going to send you the link to this test. Please do it. And I said it's gonna take you probably an hour or so, but I think especially after this share, you'll enjoy it. And it's not particularly difficult, it really isn't. And there's another class that I'm trying to create. It's gonna be a little while, but like similar kind of thing to this, but a bit more practical, hands down. So I'll keep you posted if you want to join that as well. And don't forget to bounce around the website B'nai Aliyah. There's a lot of not just for me, but for I put on Shirin from other people who a lot of really helpful ideas bouncing around the website, and it's all free and it should just be a helpful resource. So chat is B'nai Aliyah with a dash, B-N-E-I dash A-L-I-Y-H. Okay, it's a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Okay.
Bye-bye.